Nerd Soul.
Late Ill Kid at One Youngster holding it down, bringing that street geek and nerd soul. What is up, my people? Today, oh yeah, coming with another wonderful episode of Dope Folks. We have been having fun talking to some cool people, writers, artists, creators, all that jazz. Today, we have an awesome writer for you guys to meet, unless you've already met him because he's been on the show two or three times, something like that. So, without further ado, the writer extraordinaire, Brandon Easton.
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing, bro?
Not bad. It's been a while. Well, sort of a while. We saw each other at Pulp Fiction.
Yeah, for a little bit. Right. Yeah. On Black Creators Day.
Yeah. So we saw each other for a second, but it's been a while. The last time we really, really talked was probably LA Comic Con, maybe? Something like that?
Absolutely, yeah.
Before we get started, if people don't know you, who are you? What do you do? Oh, well, they know who you are, but what do you do?
Well, thank you. I'm Brandon Easton. I'm a screenwriter and graphic novel creator. I've been working in the business pretty much since around 2002. I broke into the industry alongside LaShawn Thomas on a series called Arcanium for Dreamwave Productions. And a few years went by. I was teaching in New York City for a little while, and I moved out to LA in 2008, which led to me getting my first Hollywood credit ever, which was on the Thundercats reboot, Warner Brothers Animation, Thundercats reboot of 2011. And that was my actual first credit ever in the industry, so to speak. After that, literally right after that, my first original graphic novel, Shadow Law, dropped. I won a Glyph Award for Best Writer of 2013, I believe it was. And after that, things kind of took on a life of its own. I ended up working on the Transformers show, Rescue Bots. And then I got signed with Lion Forge Comics for like a six graphic novel deal, and I did a bunch of stuff for them. But one of the biggest things that came out of that was the Andre the Giant Closer to Heaven biographical graphic novel that I wrote alongside, I would say, his daughter, Robin Christensen. I got a lot of information about his personal life from her. And my career is kind of like went forward from there. In 2015, I got into the Disney ABC writing program, which led to me being a writer on season two of Marvel's Agent Carter for ABC. And right before that, in 2014, I was an Eisner Award nominee for Watson and Holmes, issue number six. So that was a major milestone for me alongside the ABC program. And since then, I've worked on quite a few things. I've done a bunch of stuff for IDW, like Mobile Armor Strike Command, Transformers Deviations. Currently, I'm doing Star Trek Year 5 for them. I'm doing Marvel Action Spider-Man, writing this new series. Judge Dredd, False Witness, number one for IDW, dropped last week, which is the last new comic book day for quite some time, unfortunately. I do have more Transformers stuff on the way. I'm one of the writers on season one of Netflix's upcoming Transformers War for Cybertron Siege, which is one of the biggest milestones of my career so far. And I'm also working on a Transformers comic, which I don't know when it'll come out, but it's Transformers Galaxies. It's an Ultra Magnus story arc where he's going to search for his mentor, Alpha Trion. And that was originally slated for a release for June 2020, but again, because of the current global situation, I don't know when that's going to drop. But yeah, that's my career in a nutshell. I also worked on Vampire Hunter D. I've done a graphic novel for that, which will be dropping hopefully sometime this year. And
I've been waiting for that one.
Yeah, you and everybody else. I keep getting emails every other day about that. But yeah, so that kind of like brings us up to date on a lot of things I've worked on. I've probably left out a couple of things here and there, but yeah, that's my career in a nutshell. You know? And it's always great to talk to you and see you again. So keep up the good work with Nerd Soul, because you've done a phenomenal job getting your name out there and, you know, putting black folks whose work usually might not be represented or recognized. You've put a lot of good people in front of a camera. So, you know, props to you too, bro.
Thanks. I just see people. I know people are grinding, doing their hard work. So I'm like, yo, man, I gotta, you know, try to shine a light on it. But a lot of people, well, you named Transformers a couple of times. If you could describe your love for Transformers for those who might be like, he works on a lot of Transformers stuff. Why is it such a big deal? It's just Transformers.
Yeah, I'll tell you. I grew up, I was born in 74. So when season one of the original Generation 1, or G1 as we call it, Transformers dropped, I was 10 years old. I was right smack dab in the middle of that target demographic, and they grabbed me, and I've been a fan ever since it first dropped. And you know, we might get into this, but you know, I had some rougher times when I was young. I grew up in Baltimore, and you know, later in life things got a little bit rough, but earlier there were a couple of little bumps here and there with family difficulties. So I was able to use stuff like Transformers and Star Wars and Star Trek and all the great pivotal animation of the 1980s as a way of not getting too burdened by some of the darkness around me. So Transformers became like shining light, like a beacon of goodness, and something I could always look forward to every weekend or every afternoon.
Great, great. So with that all out there, you have been writing for quite some time through comics, through television, and you've been pretty as open as you could be about your first feature that you just finished.
Oh yeah, right.
If you could for a bit describe your, you know, pros, cons, your successes, your pitfalls, and the differences, major or even maybe minute, between comics, television, and film, when you're kind of like writing, whether it's the beginning process or even the end?
Well, I mean, it's tricky because comics are a static medium. Obviously, it's a two-dimensional page. You're not hampered by budget in terms of what you could have somebody create for you. I mean, obviously, you have to hire an art team and all that. But if you want to blow up the earth 15 times in your comic, that can happen. With television and film, but TV and film are very different because the production time for television is super fast. So if you write something on a Monday and you get a final draft into your producers the next Monday, like, you know, next cycle, that is going to be shot within the next 15 days. And a few days after that, after it's edited, it might be on television. So the production time in TV is super fast. And with television, there's a lot of little things you have to think about. Like, budget is number one, but one of the things I learned in TV compared to everything else is try to minimize night shooting as much as possible. Because when you shoot in TV, right? Any TV writer who's ever worked on an actual show, not cartoon, but like a live action show, they will tell you this. If you're shooting outside at night, that means you're going to get there. And if it's summertime, it's even worse. But you have to get there like 6 p.m. You'll be setting up from 6 p.m. to probably 9 to 10 p.m. And you will shoot from like 11 p.m. to about 4 a.m. for a night shoot, because in the summertime, the sun comes up a lot sooner. So you're going to lose that darkness, and you don't want to be, you know, trying to sweeten it in post-production because the sun cannot be hidden. You know, shooting day for night is very, very tough. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So like, I know it's done, but it's usually partially.
Right. So with TV, you can't blow up the earth a bunch of times. And if you do in one episode, let's say your average TV series now has 13 episodes, right? One of those episodes is going to be your big special effects, flush it down the toilet. You're going to spend all your money on that. The other 12 are going to be just talking. And every Netflix drama that's a genre show is like this. Very few have action and big special effects moments all the way out. Shows like The Expanse, Daredevil, Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, Game of Thrones, you know, all that type of stuff. You'll notice that they'll have six episodes of just talking heads, and then two or three episodes of the biggest action you've ever seen, and then maybe one episode where it's taking place in like one room. And there's a reason for that, because it's all budgetary. So TV is much more episodic, obviously. There's a much faster production time. Like, comics and TV have extremely fast production times, especially if you're working with a real, like an actual studio or a publisher, right? Film is different because film is kind of front loaded. You get the script and they sit there and they figure out how much this is gonna cost. Then they go and shoot it. The production time could be 60 days, it could be 14 days to 60 days to 2 years. Yeah, so film is a much, much longer process. And depending on the type of film you produce, your budget controls a lot of what you write and controls a lot of where you could go with the big set pieces. Okay. If it's a drama like Marriage Story, which just came out, or like a Kramer versus Kramer, or something like a Goodfellas, where it's a lot of talking heads, or was it the Black Klansman that came out a couple years back?
Oh, yeah.
or Hell or High Water, which is one of my favorite films of like 2 years ago. You know, it was about the two robbers in Trump, what we call Trump's America.
Yeah.
All that type of stuff, if it's not big set pieces, you could do, you're not worried about budget, you're worrying about how crisp your direction is. Because film is a director's medium, TV is a writer's medium, and comics are an illustrator's medium, in a sense that they are the ones whose fingerprint you feel more in those mediums than anything else. Okay. That's how those are the differences. Now, the pros and cons, that's a whole other story. It all depends on what you're more suited for. I don't have cons for any of them, except that how hard it is to get a TV or film writing gig. Film writing gigs are literally the hardest gigs to get on the planet. We didn't talk about animation that much, but animation has the lowest bar of entry for a novice writer, in the sense that there are a lot more animation gigs.
Okay.
TV, live action TV is very difficult because it's not that they're not jobs, because there are. It's that TV writing is dominated by like a high school mentality, in the sense that it's very click based. And if you don't fit into somebody's click, if you're not willing to, I will be frank, kiss enough ass in order to be allowed into certain little groups and little cliques. If you're a person who values your own integrity, it becomes much harder. Because if you're not willing to, as they say, play the game, quote unquote, then it will be a more difficult path. It doesn't mean you won't make it. It just means that you have a much tougher path and a much harder path. A much longer road. But the thing is, for me personally, now I will talk about myself, my ability to look in a mirror and love and respect what I see in the mirror is much more important than me getting a gig in the short term. Yeah. I'm not willing to make the personal and integrity-based sacrifices that I see a lot of people make in order to get from point A to point B. And I find that being yourself at the end of the day is much more gratifying, and getting a check because you were being yourself, to me, is much more gratifying than pretending I'm somebody else just to get work. Because at the end of the day, when those little sacrifices and those pretending, those moments of pretense, that starts to add up and it chips away at your soul, at least in my opinion. And I've seen what it does to people in this town.
Are statements like that where they say, like, people will do what you allow them to do. You know,
absolutely.
You let them take this step, and the next week they do this, and the next month you let them do that, and the next thing you know, you're say 2 years down the road, and you're not quite happy with the things that you've allowed to go on in your life. So,
right.
I can see what you're saying. And thanks for throwing in animation, because usually in my mind I just throw animation in with TV, but I know from the writer's side it's still very different.
Animation.
Advertising and all that stuff.
Yeah, I mean, depending on the type of animation, and we're seeing a shift now. But for the last, I want to say, 50 years, animation has just been about selling toys, for the most part. That's okay, because we all grew up watching that stuff. You're seeing a shift because there's a lot more adult-oriented animation that's coming through Netflix and all these other providers that don't have toy lines connected to them. Because, for example, Castlevania has no toy line. But Castlevania is doing extremely well on Netflix. And there's other ones, too. I mean, what's the one? Steven Universe? That was another one.
Oh, they have toys? That looks like something that would be prime for toys, though.
Yeah, I mean, there might be merchandising. Right. Yeah. It's merchandising, but there's no, like, Transformers-style line or G.I. Joe or My Little Pony-style line for Steven Universe. And Adventure Time, another one. The late night animation or evening animation, like the Family Guy, the Seth MacFarlane stuff, the Rick and Morty's of the world. Those things were not created with merchandising in mind. Not to say that there isn't merchandising, but
that wasn't its goal.
Right. Like Bob's Burgers, they didn't start with toys. It was a show. You know what I mean? So animation is a whole different ballgame. I mean, you still have the issues with clicks and things like that. There's much more, I feel, desperation in animation, because a lot of the older writers in animation who can no longer get TV writing gigs are extremely desperate because without a certain number of gigs per year, you will lose your health insurance through the Writers Guild and all these other guilds. So
there's a whole nother side of the game that, you know, we don't even think about.
When I first got in, I hit a wall of resentment from a lot of people who I never knew. I didn't know who any of these people were, but they were giving me attitude, and I don't respond well to that. But I found out later was because I was taking a gig from them because they needed that gig to get health insurance. And when people are living like that, the question I start to ask them is like, is this shit worth it? Excuse my language. Is it really worth it? Because there are other jobs. There's a lot of other jobs out there. And no matter how old you are, you can transition into another career if you decide not to be lazy. But there's a lot of people, and I hate to say this, but it's just for the sake of being honest. There's a whole lot of people in this industry. And we're finding this out right now because of COVID-19, that they don't have any other skills. They can't dip into retail. So they're scared right now. And this is where I'm so glad for my graphic novel career. Because if I did not have my comic books, I would have been working at Walmart a couple of years after Agent Carter ended, because I hit a wall in this business. And a lot of people do. And it wasn't just me. I mean, I've seen some stuff go down, which, you know, I won't be able to get into all that now. Yeah. I mean, one day, when I'm a little bit more secure in my career and a little bit more...
You can write the tell-all.
I'm not even going to write a tell-all. I'm just going to get on YouTube and just be like, look, this is all the stuff that happened to me. These are some of the people involved. And a lot of it was racial. A lot of it was about not being pretty enough for the in crowd. You know? There's a lot of stuff that goes on in this
you
business.
You really hit something, because that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah, it's
because
real,
you
bro.
You also have, I don't know, pretty factor or handsome factor or whatever. That's a whole nother thing that people will hold against you. Like, if you look like Shamar Moore, you're going to get more opportunities than if
you're
right.
If that was a screenwriter, the thing is, I've never met him. I know nothing about him. But if he was a horrible writer, because of what he looked like, he would still get work because people want to look at him all day. I mean, it's crazy. Like this town.
I see where you're going on that one.
You understand what I'm saying?
That's a good point.
Yeah, it's real.
You don't even think about that, even though I'm in the corporate world for advertising and stuff like that. But, you know, you kind of play the game. You know, you have you have work. You know, there's work mic, there's home mic. And work mic, I've literally been on the phone with someone that knows me, but at work, and they've been like, who are you?
Right.
And it's like, look, man, hey, look, all right? You know.
And you hit on a really cool thing, because there is obviously being professional, right?
Yeah.
And you're a professional. We all go into a work environment. So, when I talk about playing the game, in quotes, I'm not talking about the necessity of being professional and kind and decent, which is what I think most people are, right? When in a work environment, at least they should be, in my opinion, right? But when I talk about it, it becomes a whole other thing, where I've watched strong black men act like Sam Jackson's character in Django Unchained just so they can get TV jobs.
Ooh.
And
that's a whole nother level.
And that, so
I don't want to be threatening. I don't want to scare nobody because I know the deal. But that's a whole nother level.
Well,
Sam Jackson.
I dial it back, and this goes back to me talking about my integrity, because I'm not mean. I mean, you know me. But for people who don't, I'm not mean to anybody. I treat everybody I treat everybody the same. I always try to help people. I always try to open up doors for people because people did that for me. I believe in paying it forward. But then there's a whole other level of kind of backbending and like cotton picking you got to do around some of these people in order for them to feel comfortable. And I'm like, if I was a white dude who was mean and cruel and sexually assaulted women, I would be allowed to have a career up until very recently. But generally speaking, these guys have always had careers.
Up until literally
about two years ago. Maybe. And I'm saying maybe because there's a lot more of them who are still running around. But what I'm getting at
Because the power shift ain't fully...
Right, you know. Right. But my point is, a white guy who is brutal and cold and hurtful and a criminal can be advanced through the ranks with almost no resistance. But a black dude who is innocent, who does nothing wrong, who treats people with absolute dignity and kindness and respect, but because you're a black dude, that alone is a block for some people. Like, not being a criminal, being a decent human being, and all this shit stuff, you know, that's not enough. You also have to, like, pick cotton, you know, with a cotton picking mentality. And it's just, and I'm not saying all the brothers and sisters working are doing
this. Oh, no.
But a lot of them are. And you see it. And I'm just like, one minute they're one way, and I see how it weighs on their soul. I'm like, you can't be a... Abraham Lincoln said it best. A nation cannot live being half slave and half free, right? I'm paraphrasing. A human being cannot prosper being half slave and half free. And I find that a lot of black writers in this town are half slave and half free. And ooh. I see it play out. And I just like, yo, is it really worth it at the end of the day? I don't think so.
Nah. Now, I'm glad you hit on that. Earlier, I believe yesterday or today, you wrote, today on Facebook, you had a quote where you said, or you were talking about an interaction saying, regarding the world of TV writing, a wise person once told me, quote, this is an industry made up of transactional relationships. With that, how would you, I guess, describe it without going too far in a way to help people? Because I know there's many people that are like, hey, I want to write. I want to write TV, or I want to write some story for a film. Or I want, like, so how do you, you know, of course, without going too far, but kind of embellish, if you will.
Now, I'd be happy to. Okay, so one of the things that you'll learn in TV is that, one, it's all about networking. Because you need to go to these little mixers and meet people and talk to people and hand out your card. It's the same old, you press the flesh, they call it. You know, they do it, and you do it in comic books, you do it in all industries. Mm-hmm. law, engineering, obviously high finance and business, it's all network. Politics, all network. So you got to get to know people. You know, people have to see also that you're not a complete lunatic, because that's the issue too. There's some crazy people who say that they want to be writers. They're not writers. They're not even, they don't have the skill, but they just want, they say that they want to be writers. I meet people like this all the time, okay?
Man, I'm sure you, now, I've met some. It's like, oh, I'm a writer. I want to be a writer. It's like, oh, okay. Cool. You got anything?
Nope. Right. So that's number one. So number two. Now, when you get into the business, you find out that a lot of it is just transactional relationships. Now, in and of itself, that's not an evil thing, because most of life is a bartering system anyway. Like, you get something, you give something. Life is compromise, right? The industry is somewhat, you know, about compromise. You can't write that, but you can write this. I'll give you this much, but you have to take that scene out. You know, so it's just the ebb and flow. This is not necessarily a negative thing, but the transactional relationships get problematic when, if you're a friend of someone, and we all have our up years and our down years, right? Yeah. But when you have your up years and you're ascending, you have a lot of friends, because a lot of people, you don't, like, this is something I'm gonna give you my perspective, as well as everything I've ever seen in the business. But when you're ascending, there's a lot of people wanting to jump on board. They want, everybody's your buddy.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to get to know who you are. They want to take you out and pick your brain, or they just want to get to know who the new kid on the block is, like the flavor of the month. Yeah. Then if something bad happens and things go bad, like you don't get stabbed for a little while or whatever happens, right? Suddenly, people who you helped get jobs, people who you hyped up, people who you tried to help when they were at their absolute worst, but they, when they get their jobs, when they get staff, when they get put on, they're not around no more, because you're no longer useful. Like, they're not, I've watched people not turn around and help me when I've, you know, done the same for them when they were not doing well. And that was the eye opener. Like, I knew on an intellectual level that was real, but I didn't know on a spiritual level that was real. And that's what I dealt with in 2017 and 2018 were like almost rock bottom. Like, I was almost about to just walk away, and I didn't, but I almost did. And things didn't turn around until like October of 2018. But basically from fall of 2016 to summer of 2018, my career was almost gone, and my TV writing career was almost done. And a lot of the folks around me who I thought was going to be, you know, down with the cause or whatever, they just vanished. And I'm just like, okay, now that things have gotten back to normal for me, I know who they are. I will never allow them to hurt. They didn't hurt me the first time, but I expected something. I have no expectations. So that's the trick, is that once you get in, just be careful and understand who are your actual friends. And the thing is, you won't learn that until something bad happens.
Unfortunately.
Then you learn that, oh, that person is not really on my side. I thought they was, because they talk good. They talked a good game, but they got put on, you know, and now it's a whole different game. So that's what I meant by that. So that's what I mean when I say the transactional relationships, because I do things for people who do things for me. But if we were friends, if we become friends, if that scenario evaporates or vanishes, I'm still going to be your friend. I'm going to be your friend if you are a showrunner. I'm going to be your friend if you're, you know, fetching coffee for a fucking writer or whatever. I'm not going to like treat you differently. But that's not the way it goes here. Like I said, it's a high school mentality. It's all hierarchy, you know, and some people play into it. I don't, but some people do. And that's how it is.
Yeah, I've experienced something semi-similar where you're like in a group and everything's fine. Everybody's great. Everybody's happy. Mm-hmm. And then you disagree with something. And then next thing you know, the knives is out. And you're like, hey,
what's
we don't
about?
Have to fight. I'm just disagreeing with this thing. And then the idea is like, no, we have to fight and die on this hill. And I'm like, wow.
Okay. Just weird sometimes.
Yeah. Now, to change it up a little bit, I met you when you had just put out Shadow Law, I think.
2012?
Maybe.
I don't yeah, I didn't meet
probably
you.
So. Because I moved to LA in 2011. So.
I don't know, man, because I felt like I met you like more recently than later.
Maybe not. I remember because I picked up Shadow Law and I got it signed by you. And
okay.
So hold on, Nerd So Light gonna come and help out. But I picked it up and I really enjoyed it. And I know we've talked a little bit about Shadow Law. If you could describe Shadow Law a little bit, and when are we gonna get some more? Because it kind of hangs at the end.
Yeah. Okay. So,
and I'm like, yo, where's the rest?
There's a whole story. Shadow Law is an entire, like, the story of the creation of Shadow Law is an epic that deserves to be told. I'll try to give you the short version. So the first things first, Shadow Law is a story of Richter Cesaro. He's a mecha pilot, giant robot pilot in a Catholic-controlled future society. During an urban pacification mission, basically putting down a street riot, he inadvertently kills his commanding officer and therefore is sentenced to a place called a sanctuary district, which is, you know, basically a labor camp. But when he gets there, he learns that that labor camp is secretly a vampire feeding zone, and that the Catholic-controlled future world has made a pact to send people to there as food from time to time. And Richter gets caught up in the middle of a massive conspiracy that he had no idea he was a part of. That's what Shadow Law is about. And it's basically the story of him figuring it all out and trying to escape from that sanctuary district. And meanwhile, one of the most powerful vampires in the world is in control of it. So there you go. Yeah. Now, the story behind the story is that I started writing Shadow Law in like 2001. Had to be. It didn't hit stores until January 2012. So that tells you what was going on. I went through, I want to say, 6 to 8 different art teams over the course of 8 years.
Okay.
Get that book done, which is why the first chapter is one artist and the other three is somebody completely different. And I was trying to make sure that they were close visually as possible. But
I thought that was being done to illustrate different moments of the story. But that was done. that wasn't.
The first guy, you know, I liked him a lot. His name is Scott Kester. But there were a lot of issues behind the scenes that prohibited him from getting the book done. And the second person, then the eighth person eventually finished it. But overall, it was a brutal, brutal, brutal process where I made every mistake you could make as a indie comic book creator. So while Shadow Ball, I'm very proud of it, it was not the best example of what I can create. And one day I am gonna go back to it. I will absolutely return to the world of Shadow Law because it's too much. I constructed Shadow Law to go thousands of years backward and thousands of years forward. There's so much to that world that is yet to be uncovered, and it's all in here. I just got to put it down someday and hire an artist who will finish.
okay, cool. Well, with that said, I got one question to kind of like wrap up everything, because I know we've talked for quite some time, and you dropped, I think, a good amount of jewels. Do you agree? So yeah. All right, cool. So, with your career going forward, what are you looking forward to do? Did you want to? Is there anything that you want to plug that's coming up, or do you have any ideas on kind of like a pathway for someone who's maybe at that cusp where they got their first job or two, and they want to kind of like navigate from here on?
Sure. So the first thing I'd say is I just finished my first paid official film script or feature length script. Just did the rewrite. Actually, it's my rewrite. I had to do a page one rewrite. So that was fun. But I got that done. So that movie, hopefully it's going to get shot, which is rare because a lot of films get written and never shot. So if it gets shot, it'll come out. So hopefully by 2021, or maybe early 2022, this film I wrote will be in theaters somewhere. That's what I'm hoping. I think there's a strong possibility for that. Now, with that being said, the Transformers show, War for Cybertron Siege, will be released on Netflix in June of this year, as what we think, I believe it is. Okay. Like I said, the Judge Dredd book is currently on hiatus, as is everything else in comics. But Judge Dredd, Marvel Action Spider-Man, Star Trek Year 5, and Transformers Galaxies, all books I'm working on, are all being shelved right now, like the rest of the industry is. Yeah. I have a lot of things I'm working on. Actually, today I'm going to be spending all day writing a new outline for a new TV pilot, and I'll be talking about that too. As another pilot sample that's going to go out, because staffing season, strangely, is still going on for television. Now, the second half of your question, what would I say to people who are trying to break in? I have a lot to say. I have a podcast called Writing for Rookies. And it's writingforrookies.podcastpeople.com. I have quite a few episodes going back to 2005 or 2008. I can't remember. But it's all about my career. It starts with me as a teacher in New York City. And it goes from me as a teacher in New York City to my current life. So you get to see and hear all the ups and downs, the pitfalls, the successes and the failures in the podcast. But the point of the podcast is to provide advice for science fiction and comic book writers specifically. So I have a lot of advice for them. But my number one advice is to finish what you start. You know, I always say the literary marketplace is littered with the corpses of half-completed manuscripts. Plays and comics. There are a lot of people who never start. There are people who start and give up. There are people who finish but never rewrite or revise. You have to finish.
They never go into drafting periods.
Yeah. Writing is rewriting. Getting the first draft done is only like 40% of the way. The other 60% is rewrite and marketing yourself. And that's a whole other, I talk about all that on the podcast. And it's free. Free podcast. I don't charge. You know? This year, I would say people could come and see me at conventions, because I had a panel set up for WonderCon. I had a panel set up. I was getting a panel set up for San Diego Comic-Con. not happening. I don't know what's going to happen with Long Beach Comic-Con, and I definitely don't know what's going to happen with Los Angeles Comic-Con, formerly Stan Lee's Kamikaze or whatever.
Yeah, they might be far enough down the road, but maybe not. You never really know.
Then there's Comic-Con Revolution, which is going to be in Ontario, California, not Canada. And I was going to be there. I was one of the big guests there. And I was going to be on a panel or two. But that show in Ontario is dreadfully underrated. It is absolutely a fantastic show. If you are in the Inland Empire or, you know, San Bernardino area or any Riverside County, any of those counties, come down to Comic-Con Revolution in Ontario. It was supposed to be in May. It's getting pushed to the fall or August, I believe. So that's all the stuff that I have coming up. And I say that for the sake that if people have questions for me about writing, I'll be happy to answer them, as I always am.
Cool, cool. Well, with that said, tell the wonderful people where they can find you online, besides writing for Rookies.
Yep. I'm on Twitter, at Brandon Easton, straight up. I'm on Instagram, at Brandon Easton Writer, with a W. Let's see. I'm on Facebook. I think it's Brandon.Easton. I'm not sure, but you can find me pretty easily on Facebook. I usually spend more time on Twitter, but lately I've been promoting a lot more on Facebook because people are actually on Facebook now, you know, again. And you see me all around at conventions. I live in Long Beach, California. There's a comic book shop in Long Beach called The Atomic Basement. I usually hang out there. So folks who are in Southern California, and when it opens up again, you'll find me there. Everything's shut down. But again, Atomic Basement, that's on 3rd Street in downtown Long Beach. I'm around. You can always find me. So reach out, folks. I'm always, and Mike will tell you, I'm easy to talk to.
Yeah, yeah. Well, once again, thank you for your time. Thank you for rolling through. Guys, of course, check him out. Check out his work. He's done tons of stuff. And keep up on, you know, all the books that he's dropping. Because I'm waiting. I think you said, well, now since everything's like shelved. But I do want to get, bless you, I want to get the graphic novel for, or the collected edition for the Transformer stuff. Because you got me hype. You were talking about some stuff with Ultra Magnus, and me hype. So I was like, I want to get that whole collected, whatever set that is, that without spoiling any stuff that you told me, but that segment that you're talking about.
Okay, so
Ultra Magnus and...
I wish I had better news for you. Well, I would recommend strongly. Okay, this is where we would start. I would say read the new Transformers series that IDW has. It's just called Transformers because it's really been, the whole thing has been set up since issue number one. They're up to issue 18. If you read issues 1 through 18, it's a much better experience than reading them month by month because you get their whole thing. So I strongly recommend, they're up to issue 18. They're going to be collecting them soon. That one. Then Transformers Galaxies. That's the side book. That's where Ultra Magnus is going to be. However, the first two arcs, the first arc is Constructicon arc. The second arc is Cliff Jumper. Those will be collected sooner before later. I recommend those strongly. Ultra Magnus is issue 10. They're up to issue like 5 or 6 now. So but... everything's on hiatus, so we'll see.
So, of course, guys, thank you for hanging with us. Thank you for listening to the conversation. Some dope stuff. NEID, SOUL, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. Holler at us. We will holler at you down in the comments. You want to talk about writing amongst yourselves. Brandon might be in there, but I cannot guarantee. Check him out on Twitter or whatever, and I'm sure he'll be back and forth with you guys. So, until next time, thank you for coming through, Brandon. Thank you for dropping gems, as always. And from us to you, you ready to go? All right, say peace.